Today's share in the Daf Yomi is the Gemara in Kesubos Daf Nun Beis. We begin on the very bottom of Nun Aleph Omud Beis, two lines from the bottom with the two dots. And we quote the Mishnah. The Mishnah had said, Uva Kohenes, when a man is a Kohen and his wife Nebuch is taken in captive, so then Rachman Lutzan, we have to assume that she was assaulted and he's not allowed to return her to be his wife. However, we said in the Mishnah, in that situation, the Ksuba states, even if it doesn't state it, it's a Tanai Ksuba, and it automatically happens that if the Kohen's wife is taken in captive, he has to go and redeem her, and Adrinech Lebedin Osech V'chule, and he'll go and bring her back to her city, to her country, and in other words, to her family, even though he can't bring her back to be his wife, but he has to redeem her and bring her back. So Gemara says, Amar Abaye, Abaye tells us, what happens if it was an Ammana who was married to a Kohen Gadol? Now, of course, that's not allowed. It's allowed for a Kohen Gadol to marry an Ammana. So what happens if that marriage was an Isser marriage? Ammana le Kohen Gadol. So what's the din in this situation? So Abaye says, Chayav Lefdosa, he still has an obligation to go and redeem her. Now, even though this was an Isser marriage, nevertheless, he can fulfill what it says in the Ksuba. She does have a Ksuba, Uba Kohenes Adrinech Lemdin Asech, that he will go and redeem her from captivity, and he can't take her back to be his wife on the normal circumstances, so certainly under these circumstances, when it was also to take her back to be his wife, so he goes and returns her to her Medina. So therefore, Shani Koribar, Abaye says that you still apply the situation here, and therefore, she still goes back to being her family. So therefore, in this situation, even though the marriage was an Isser marriage, and Amon to a Kohen Gadol is alive, nevertheless, he still has an obligation to go and redeem her and bring her back to her family, but of course not take her back to be his wife, because that's not allowed for two reasons here. So Ammana Kohen Gadol was also in the first place, plus we have to be choshish that she was Nebuch assaulted, so he certainly wouldn't be allowed to go and bring her back to be his wife. We turn to Dun Beis and Aleph, as opposed to, however, another type of Isser marriage, the Mamzeris and Nesinim of Yisrael. Yisrael is not allowed to marry Mamzeris, is not allowed to marry the Nesinim. We said previously that the Nesinim were the Givonim. They were during the times of Yoshua, that they tricked Klal Yisrael into thinking that they were from far away, and Yoshua didn't want to go back on his word, and he said, okay, we won't attack you, but they were forever given over as Chotvei Eitzim and Shoavei Mayim. So therefore, they weren't allowed to marry into the Kahal. This was re-strengthened again during the times of David HaMelech. We had discussed this all previously. In any event, the Mamzeris and the Nesina are not allowed to go and marry a Yisrael. That's an Isser marriage. In this situation, if Rachman al-San, the Mamzeris and the Nesina, is captured, and there is the chashash over here that they're never assaulted, but if it was a regular kosher marriage, they would be allowed to return to their husbands, because we say it wasn't a willful adultery that they committed. They were never assaulted. In this situation, eino chaylip dosa, the husband doesn't have an obligation to redeem her, because she'ein ani koreba, because we don't say about this woman when he redeems her, vosivnach li into, that will take them back to be a wife, because it's aser for the Mamzeres and Nesina to be his wife. And therefore, as opposed to the Ammana, the Kohen Gadol, where we do apply that I'll return you back to your nation, which applies even in an Isser marriage, but here, the Mamzeres and Nesina can't be returned back to be the wives, because that was aser. So therefore, Abaye distinguishes the difference between Ammana, Kohen Gadol. He does have a redemption requirement, whereas the Mamzeres and Nesina doesn't have the redemption requirement by the husband. Rava disagrees. Rava Amar, Kol she Isser, Shivya Gorim La. If the Isser of the captivity was what caused her to be not allowed to go and go back to her husband, such as the case of regular Cohen's wife, Rachmona Litzlan, who was captured, so then Chai Ledosa, then he still has an obligation to go and redeem her. However, Isser Dover Achar Gorim La, but if there already was an Isser in the marriage, so then Rava says, even in the case of Ammana Kohen Gadol, we can return it to her nation, nevertheless, Eino Chaylif Dosa. So Rava agrees with Abaye, of course, among Zeres and Asina, that there is no obligation to redeem them, but Rava, as opposed to Abaye, says that there's no obligation to redeem the Ammana Kohen Gadol as well, because there was an Isser involved in the first place. So there's a fundamental difference between Abaye and Rava. Mori wants to suggest that this is a Machlokas Tanoim. Abaye and Rava, great, great Amorayim, but if we can be told of this on an earlier Tanoik machlokis, that's always desirable. So lemo ki tanoik, let us say this machlokis Abaye and Rava, as to whether the Ammana married to a Kohen Gadol is required to be redeemed, as Abaye says, or not required to be redeemed, as Rava says, is a machlokis tanoim. And that is for the following brisa, where it says, Hamadir es ishto v'nishbeis. If a man goes and asks his wife to even hani hanoah from him, in other words, he is no longer allowed to be married to her, because as Rashi says in Dibra Maschal Madu Zishto, she is also now Milenoslo to give him any Hanah. And therefore, they can't stay married, because by being married together, he's going to get benefit from her. Now, If she then is captured, so according to the Girsa that we have right now, he is first Madu Dano, and then she's captured. So Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Poda, he still has to redeem her, but knows he loks Ksubasa. And after he redeems her, he's not allowed to be married to her, so then he gives her the Ksuba. But he does have an obligation to go and redeem her. Rabbi Shu disagrees. Rabbi Shu Omer, knows he loks Ksubasa, go and give her the Ksuba, because you have no ability to go back and live with her, because you asked her not from her. So this is analogous to the case of Rava with the Amana Kohen Gadol, or the Maseres Sin Li Yisrael, that since the marriage is usher, so there's no requirement to redeem. So ultimately we're going to say that Rabbi Yeshua aligns with Rava, and Rabbi Eliezer aligns with Abaye. So again, Rabbi Yeshua Omer, no sin lak subasa ve'no poda. So this will be the alignment that we're trying to go and set up. However, just we continue to write. So Amar Rabbi Yossi says, I went and asked, Sha'alti Yisumchus, Kish Amar Rabbi Yeshua, no sin lak subasa ve'no poda. In the scenario that we just said, Rabbi Yeshua says that when he was madir hanah from her, then he doesn't have the obligation to redeem her. He just gives her the ksuba and walks away, because he can't go and return it to be his into, to be his wife. So therefore, this din doesn't apply. So when Rabbi Yeshua said this, Rabbi Yossi asked him, meaning he asked Sumchus, what did Rabbi Yeshua mean? Kishomer Rabbi Yeshua, no sin lak subas ve'no poda, kishedira, was that only in the case where he first made the neder to ask for his wife to give him hanah, ula b'sof nishmas, and then she was subsequently captured, and in that situation, he says that there is no obligation over here of the pidyon, because the marriage was no longer allowed to occur before the woman was captured, and therefore this is analogous to the Mamzeres and the Sinla or the Amon of the Kohen Gadol, that therefore the marriage is not allowed, and therefore there is no obligation any longer of redeeming her, and then she was subsequently captured, so already the obligation to redeem her didn't exist. Or do we say no? Or even, even if she was first captured, and then he makes the Isser of Anor, this still didn't would apply. And therefore, she wouldn't be obligated to be redeemed by her husband, even though she was captured first. So that's what Rabbi Nosson asked Sumchus. Sumchus said, I never heard the answer to this question. Vomali, lo shemati. I don't know the answer to this question. However, if you ask me my opinion, I would say, v'nirin devarim she'idiro ol b'sof nishmeis, that it would only apply Rabbi Yeshua's din, that he doesn't have to redeem her, if the Isser HaNoah occurred first, she'idira first, and only subsequently b'sof nishmeis. In that situation, there's no obligation to redeem her. However, if you want to tell me, di'amris nishmeis, that first she was captured, and then ol b'sof edira, then he made the nether, then every husband's going to do that if he doesn't want to go and redeem his wife. Also, li'arume, he's going to say, oh, I was assuring her in HaNoah, and therefore I don't have to go and redeem her. So the redemption is worth much more than the ksuba. The guy could be a horrible person and say, yeah, here's your ksuba, here's a $10,000 ksuba, and I'm not going to pay a $50,000 ransom. Whereas if he was mechuyev to ransom her, he'd have to pay the $50,000, even though the ksuba was only worth $10,000. Okay, so that was what Rabbi Nosson had said to Sumchus and what Sumchus responded. But the bottom line is, we want to go and set this machlokus up between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Shua to parallel what we had said the machlokus was in the later Amoraim, Abaye and Rava. So my lab b'madir eishes kohen kumivligi. Now, aren't they talking here in this brisa about an eishes kohen? Where v'abaye do amar k'Rabbi Eliezer, and Abaye holds like Rabbi Eliezer and says, no, you still have to go and redeem her. And Rava amar k'Rabbi Yeshua, and Rava holds like Rabbi Yeshua. So let us set this up as I just said, and this parallels the machlokus of Abaye and Rava because it's talking as well about an eishes kohen. So Gemara says no, lav dafka. The Brice is not necessarily talking about an eishes kohen. Lo, hog my skin. You know what the Brice is talking about? Kigon shenadra yihi v'kiyem lo hu. It wasn't the husband that made the nether. The wife made the nether. She said, "I asked her myself to give you hanaf," and therefore the husband was mekayim the nether. The husband has within either that same day, and the machlokus doesn't mean the same day, just means me'es la'es, from 24-hour period of time, or it means until the end of the day. We possibly mean until the end of the day. So whenever she makes the nether, he has until the end of that day to go and be mekayim. The day that he finds out, b'yom shamo, the day that he hears that she made the nether, he has to go and revoke it that day, or else it's mekuyim. Or he can be mekayim right away by just saying, I'm mekayim the nether. So here, she made the nether, and he was mekayim. And that situation, that's what the Brice is talking about, but nothing to do with the Abaye and Rava, with the Amon and Kohen Gadol. Rabbi Eliezer Sovar, Rabbi Eliezer holds, who knows Sein Etzba Ben Shinah? Rabbi Eliezer holds that he still has to go and redeem her because he's the one that put her, so to say, finger between her teeth, and that's why she bit it off, because he was Mekayim the Nether. He had the opportunity to be made for the Nether, and he wasn't made for the Nether. So therefore, it's considered as if he caused her not to be able to have her Noah from him by being Mekayim the Nether, and therefore, he is the cause of her not being allowed to stay married to him, and therefore, he still has to go and redeem her. Whereas on the other hand, Rabbi Yeshua Savar, he nosna etzel Rishonim. She is the one that made the neder, so she's the troublemaker over here, and therefore he doesn't have to go and redeem her. And that's what the machlokus is. It has nothing to do with the machlokus of Abaye and Rava by the Amon of the Kohen Gadol. More questions. It says, wait a second. If you're telling me he nosna etzel Rishonim, if she is the cause, so then she doesn't get a ksuba. Ksuba my avinita. What are you telling us over here? He doesn't have to redeem her. He just gives her a ksuba and walks away. If she is the rebellious one, if she doesn't allow the marriage to continue, so she loses a ksuba. So here, she's the one that said, I asa hanoa for me to you. So she's causing the marriage to go kaput. So therefore, she's not entitled to a ksuba. So how can you be telling us over here that Yoshua says, just give her the ksuba and walk away, and you don't have to redeem her? And furthermore, v'su, I'm Rabbi Nassan. Then how do we understand Rabbi Nassan asking sumchas, shalti sumchas, kisham Rabbi Yeshua no sa ksuba osa v'eno poda, when Rabbi Yeshua said that you just give her the ksuba and you don't have to redeem her? We had said, he had asked, Rav Nosson asked Sumchas, does that occur? Basically, the nether was first made, and then she was subsequently captured. Or did it even occur? Even if she was first captured, and only the nether was made afterwards. And Sumchas had said, I didn't hear that answer. However, if that was the case, if you're telling us that she was the one that made the nether, so then what difference does it make? Mali hidira ulubasof nishbeis, mali nishbeis ulubasof hidira. Then the whole differentiation that Sumchas had made as to whether she was captured first or she was first asur the hanah by the husband. If you're saying that she was the one that asur the hanah, so then what difference does it make whether she was captured first or not captured first? She's the cause of the problem, and she's not entitled to a ksuba, and she doesn't have to be redeemed. So this can't be the way to understand the machlokas between Lezer and Yeshua. And we go back to our original thinking. Let's set up Rabbi Lezer and Yeshua to be machlokas, similar to what later on Abaye and Rava had the machlokas. Someone says, nope, still not. Eloliolam the Adro Ihu. We're actually talking about a case where he was the one that was, the husband was the one that asked an awe from his wife to him, and therefore he's the cause of the problem. And Rabbi Lezer says, therefore, she gets redeemed and gets a ksuba, even though they can't stay married anymore. And Rabbi Shua says, no, in this situation, since he's not allowed to go and return her to the marriage, so therefore he doesn't have to redeem her, exactly like Rava said. But if you can tell us that this is the situation, so it's not like the machlokas of Abaye and Rav, why not? Because if Abaye matars the Taimei, Abaye would learn this machlokas of Rabbi Lezer and Yeshua in his way to be in accord, both of them, with his Shita, but Rav matars the Taimei, and Rav would also explain both Rabbi Lezer and Yeshua to be in accord with his Shita. So how do we do that? So Abaye matars the Taimei, Abaye would say, and both of them hold like me. Both Rabbi Eliezer and Yeshua would agree with me that the Amon Kohen Gadol, he does have to go and redeem her, albeit he's going to return back to her Medina and not back to be his wife, because it's also now we have to be choshesh that she was never assaulted, and the Kohen's wife was assaulted, is not allowed to stay married to him. So Bai says they both agree with me. They say as follows. Amon Kohen Gadol, in the case of the Amon Kohen Gadol, both Rabbi Eliezer and even Rabbi Yeshua Kuli Amal lo pligid the Chayav of Tosa, that there's an obligation to redeem her. Even Rabbi Yeshua would say in that situation there's an obligation to redeem her. And likewise, everybody would agree. Mamzeres and Zilu Yisrael Kuli Amal lo pligid the Eino Chayav Bedosa. Everybody would agree in that situation that there is no Chayav to redeem her. Exactly, Abai says, as I said. No, what are they arguing about then? Madir Eishes Kohen Nami, and in the situation where it was an Eishes Kohen, who the Kohen had asked his wife to have an offer from him, also, Kuli Amal lo pligid the Chayav Dosa. Even in that situation, everybody agreed that, even Rabbi Yeshua would agree, certainly Rabbi Lezer, that he has to go and redeem her because he's going to bring her back to the Medina Sech. Why is that? Because the Aino Amana, the Kohen Gadol, this is no different than the case of the Amana marrying a Kohen Gadol. That's what the Oz Gimel, the Mashal, adds over here, the words of Kohen Gadol. So this is exactly the same case. So where then, according to Abaye, do Rabbi Lezer and Yeshua have a machlokis? Keep leaking. The only time that they have a machlokis is in the case of Bimadir Eishes Yisrael, when the husband, who is Yisrael, asks his wife to have an off from him. And in that situation, Rabbi Lezer Ozil Basar Meikara. Rabbi Lezer goes, you look at it from the very beginning. At the very beginning, there was a chiyuv to go and be poured to the wife, and albeit now there is an isser to go and return it, but you go back from the beginning, you look at it from the beginning, and therefore, at the beginning, there was a chiyuv to redeem her and bring her back to be his wife, and only afterwards was there, at some point in time, this madir hanoa on her that goes and removes that ability to take her back. But you go by the initial, there was a chiyuv to go and redeem her and take her back, and that's why Beleza says that you, in fact, have to go and redeem her and take, and even though you're madir hanoa, you have to go redeem her, albeit you won't be able to take her back. And Yeshua says, no. Yeshua says, Ozil Basar Basof. He says, you look at it right now. Right now, bottom line is, there's an Isser Hanoah, and he can't go bring her back to be his wife, so therefore there is no Chiyuv to go and redeem her. So that's how Abaye learns both of them hold like him, and it has nothing to do with the machlokas that he had with Rava. Similarly, Rava Matoris Tameh. Rava says it has nothing to do with the machlokas that I have with Abaye. Both of them agree with me. Both of them would say that the Amon to Kohen Gadol, in fact, has no obligation to redeem. Certainly Rabbi Yeshua and even Rabbi Lezer would say that. Why? Rabbi Toretz Taimei, he says, Amon le Kohen Gadol, in that case, or Mamzeres Tzitzin le Yisrael, Kuli Yamalo Pligi, the Enu Chayv Lefdosa, because they can't bring them back to be the wife. So therefore, even Rabbi Lezer agrees that in that situation, there is no obligation to redeem. Exactly like Rabbi said. So what are Rabbi Lezer and Yeshua arguing about? Ki Pligi b'Madir. They're only arguing about the case where there was a Mudor Hanoah situation where the husband was Madir Hanoah from his wife. He said, I can't get any Hanoah from you. So therefore, the husband is the one now that caused this to occur. So, Bein Eishes Kohen or Bein Eishes Yisrael. This has nothing to do with whether it's a wife of a Kohen or the wife of Yisrael. Rabbi Lezer says in both situations, like we brought down a minute ago, Rabbi Lezer, Ozil, Basar Meikar. Rabbi Lezer says you go by the beginning. At the beginning there was an obligation, so even though subsequently there is no obligation, bottom line is, we still go by after the beginning. Whereas Rabbi Yeshua goes after the end. Rabbi Yeshua, Ozil, Basar, Basalf. And therefore, right now there is no obligation, so despite the fact that there was an obligation originally, he doesn't have to go redeem him. That's what Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Lezer are arguing about. And therefore, in this situation, it has nothing to do with the Amon and Kohen Gadol that Abaye and Rava were arguing about. Rava says both of them could hold like me because they're arguing about whether Basa Meikara or Basa Basof. That's the Machlokas. And Abaye also said the Machlokas has nothing to do with Amon and Kohen Gadol. They both hold like me. And also the Machlokas is Ozil Basar Meikara or Ozil Basar Basof, albeit it's a different scenario that they're talking about. Okay, that's how we say that this is not a machlokas of lema kitanoi for Abaye and Rav. Then we quote the Mishnah. The Mishnah said, Nishbeis chayv l'fdosu hule. We had said that even if you didn't write it into the ksuba, so it's a tnai ksuba that the husband has to go and redeem the wife. Tanur Rabban, the following brisa, what happens if Nishbeis b'chayi bala? She was never captured while her husband was alive. And then v'yachakach meis bala, but then the husband died before she was redeemed. So is there a chiv on the inheritors of the husband to go and redeem the captive wife? So, hikir ba bala, if the husband was aware that she was captured before he died, so then, yarshin chayavin liftosa. So the Bryce says, Tanakama says, in that situation, the yarshin, the estate, has to definitely go and redeem her. However, lo hikir ba bala, the Tanakama says over here in the Bryce that if the husband was unaware that his wife was captured and he died before he was aware that she was captured, then ain yarshin chayavin liftosa. Then the yarshin do not have to go and redeem her. Now, that's what the Braisa says. Levi saw b'lemevad uvda ki hamas nisa. So Levi wanted to go and put this halacha l'maisa, this Braisa, into effect, halacha l'maisa, and say that in the situation where the husband was aware, then the yorshim had to go and redeem the wife if she was captured. But if the husband was not aware and he died before he was aware that she was captured, then the yorshim don't have to go and redeem her. Exactly like this Braisa said, Levi wanted to do halacha l'maisa. So Amalei Rav. Rav says to Levi, Hochi amar chavivi, so said my beloved one. Chavivi is the way throughout Shas that Rav refers to his uncle. He was an uncle on both sides. He was a maternal uncle as well as a paternal uncle. And Rav was very, very close with Rabbi Chiya, and Rabbi Chiya was his Rebbe as well as his uncle, and he always called him Chavivi throughout Shas. So Rav tells Levi, this is what Rabbi Chiya said, Les Hilchasa Kiha Masnisa. We don't follow this Braisa. This Braisa is not the Halacha L'maisa. Ella Kiha D'Tanya. We follow the following Braisa, which argues with this Braisa, which says, it doesn't make any difference whether the husband knows about the captivity or not. He doesn't. The Yerushim never have to go and redeem her. Why is that? Because the Braisa says, Nish beis li'acham yisas bala. Certainly, if the woman is captured when she's already a widow, so then ena yisom chayev l'vdosa. That's a chiv of the ksuba, and the Yerushim aren't obligated in the ksuba. They have to pay the ksuba, but they're not obligated in the other aspects of the ksuba. So this is a chiv to go and redeem her because they're not entitled to ma'isi yodah. And that's connected to the redemption. So any Yisomim Chayavim Lefdosa, the Yisomim don't have to go and redeem her. That's clear. But, he says, even the low owed, even furthermore, El Afilu Nishus Chaybali, even if the husband knew that the wife was captured, it was during his lifetime, and only afterwards, V'achachach Meis Bala, then even in that situation, where the husband was aware during his lifetime, Ena Yisomim Chayavim Lefdosa, the Yisomim, the estate, is not obligated to go and redeem the wife. Why not? Because she ain't ani koribo bo svinoch liintu. Because in that situation, they can't return her to be his wife because Nebuch, he died. So even if it was during his lifetime and he knew that she was captured, nevertheless, if he dies and hasn't had a chance to redeem her, the Yisomim have no obligation to redeem her. Of course, they can, but there's no obligation to go and redeem her. So that's what Rabbi Chiya said, according to Rav, and therefore Levi shouldn't follow the first brisa, Levi should follow this brisa. Tana Rabbanon, we learn the following braisa, Nishbeis, where one son of a woman is captured, and they're demanding an exorbitant ransom for her. They're asking for 10 times her value on the open slave market, so she'd be worth $1,000. That's what they would sell her for. And they're saying, we're going to go and sell her as a slave unless you pay us $10,000. So in that situation, the first time, Pamri shown a poda. The braisa says the first time the husband has the right to go and be poda, even for 10 times the amount. And he has to go be poda for even 10 times the amount. However, if one of the sons happens again, so then it's his option. If he wishes to redeem her again, he can. If he doesn't wish to redeem her the second time, he doesn't have to. Now, why is this? So Rashi brings down the low, the bottom Rashi, less Rashi, Rotsa Enopode, the low Tiknum Borabon Elachad Pidyon. The whole concept of being obligated by a husband to redeem his wife is only one time. They didn't institute that there's an obligation to redeem her a second time as well. So therefore, Ratzah Poda, Ratzah Poda. That's what the Tanakhama of this Brisa says. Rav Shimon Gamliel disagrees. Rav Shimon Gamliel Omer, return to Nubez and Aleph, ain't Poda Nesashvui Miosu Akadei Demeib. He says, the first time even, there was no obligation to redeem her for 10 times the amount of money that she was worth. You're only allowed to redeem her for what her value is on the, quote, open slave market. So if she would be worth $1,000, so then you have to pay her $1,000 to redeem her. Why? But Nei Tikkun Olam. Rabbi says, the top Rashi tells us, Shul Yargilu Lahalos Al Pneiv. If the Goyim see that we're willing to pay exorbitant ransom prices, they're going to kidnap people left and right. If we're only going to pay the regular quote amount for them, so then they can say it's not worth it to go kidnap the Jewish women. But if we see that we're paying a tremendous amount of money, they're going to go kidnap left and right. And therefore, Mipnei Tikkun Olam, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel said, we don't allow this. Okay. Now, Gemara says, look at the language here very carefully. We said, Ha Bechadei Demei Impoded. We said that if it's for the right amount of money, then you do have to go and redeem her. So, afo gav de pirkona yosu al ksubasa. But this implies, let's say the right amount of money is $100,000. That's what she's worth on the open market. So therefore, you have to go and redeem her for $100,000. Now, her ksuba is only worth $50,000. So you have to go and redeem her even if it's worth more than the ksuba. That's what it seemed to be saying. Or many, but this goes against what Rabbi Shimon Gamliel said in another brisa. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel said, Nishbeis, if the woman was captured, Rechmon Lusan, and they're demanding even 10 times the amount of the ksuba, even 10 times as much as the ksuba, so Pamarisha Podeh, Mikan Ve'elech, Rotsa Podeh, Rotsa Enopodeh. That's the brisa we just worked out. And it said that the first time, Tanakhama says you do have to redeem her, even for 10 times the amount of the ksuba. And the second time, if you want to, you can. If you don't want to, you don't have to. And on that, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel said, Omer, imhoya pirkona kenege ksuba sapoda. He says, no. If the amount that they're asking to redeem her is equal to the ksuba, then you have to redeem her. But in lav, even if it's more than ksuba, but even though it's less than the market value, ain't no poda. You're not letting go and redeem her. Even though it's less than the market value, or equal to the market value, Rav Shimon Gamliel said over here, you don't have to go and redeem her. So what's going on? I thought you have to redeem her as long as it wasn't exorbitant. Here, it's not exorbitant, but Rav Shimon Gamliel says you don't have to redeem her. So what it says, in fact, Rav Shimon Gamliel, trei kula yisle. Rav Shimon Gamliel had two kulas over here, in the sense that you're not allowed to pay an exorbitant amount of money, and you're even not allowed to pay more than the ksub is worth. Even that is not a chiv on the husband to go and redeem his wife. Okay. Again, Baruch Hashem, very difficult for us to understand these things in our day and age when Baruch Hashem, we don't find that there are such situations where people are being captured and put up for redemption, and we have all of these halachos lemaisa. Then we quote the Mishnah again. It says, Lok, so if the woman Nebuch got sick, Chayil Raposa, husband has an obligation to go and heal her. This is considered, as we said, part of the mezonos obligation, and the husband has to go and pay the doctor bills for his wife to get better. There's a very interesting ritva here that says that by the law of the Mishnah that says loksa bedavka, that a illness struck her as opposed to if she caused her illness. Let's say she is a smoker and she Rechmon Litzlan caused herself to get lung cancer. So then the ritva would say that was her problem. She caused this to happen. Then the husband would not be obligated. Of course he can and should, but the husband would not be obligated in that situation to go and pay the doctor bills. In any way, that's what the Mishnah said. Loksa chayil raposa. We have a brisa that says the following. Almana nizonis minitsa yisomim. The almana is entitled to go and be supported from the nechasim of the yisomim. From the husband after he passes away, the yisomim, the sons, inherited the father. So of course, the estate, the yisomim, have to go and support the almana. Now, what happens if she needs refuah, or tzricha refuah? If she needs refuah, harehi kimzonis. This, as we pointed out, is like mizonis. And the husband has to go and the estate has to go. Both of them have the obligation to go and give her the doctor bills, to pay the doctor bills, because that's considered like mezonos. And both the husband during his lifetime and the estate, until the ksuba is paid, have to go and support the widow. Rav Shimon Gamliel Omer, refuah sheish lo kitzvah, then that's only true if the refuah has a set amount. He says, no, you only have this obligation to pay it like mezonos if it's something that is going to be a chronic condition and you're going to constantly have doctor bills. It doesn't have a set amount. But if it's a one-time fixed thing, she breaks her leg, and it's going to cost $5,000 to go break her leg, to fix the broken leg, so then that can be taken out of her ksuba, and that's not considered mezonos. That's what Rav Shimon Gamliel says. Along comes of Yochanan, and it qualifies this even further. Amar of Yochanan, he says, Asu akazes dam be'eretz Yisrael, ki refuash ein lo kitzvah. Since in Eretz Yisrael, they would regularly do bloodletting, they thought it was a benefit, so therefore there was no set amount for this. So therefore, this is now like mezonos. If it doesn't have a set amount, it's a chronic condition, so then this is like mezonos. Just like she has to eat every day, so too she needs akazes dam once a week, once a month, whatever they would normally do. So therefore, it is considered like a refuah she'ein lo kitzvah. Rav Yochanan says, therefore, Rav Shimon Gamliel said that this comes as mezonos and doesn't come out of her ksuba. One time such a situation occurred that the Krovim of Rav Yochanan asked them something along these lines. Krovim of Rav Yochanan, the relatives of Rav Yochanan, Habaluhu itas abba. There was a widow from their father. So these relatives of Rav Yochanan were inheriting their father's estate, and there was a widow. And the Abbasricha Rafuah Koyoma, and she needed a certain type of medicine to be treated every day. Now this had seemingly no kitzah to it, and therefore it should be like mezonos, and they should be obligated to go and do this. So they intimated Rav Yochanan, is there any way to get around this? Also came to Rav Yochanan, and he gave them the following suggestion. He said, Amaluhu, he told the relatives, a zilu kotsu le mi de lirofe. Go and find a doctor and capitate her. Go and pay this doctor $1,000 and he'll take care of her for the rest of his life. This will be the deal. And therefore, this is yesh kitzvah. It now is turned from something that doesn't have a kitzvah, doesn't have a set amount, to something that has a set amount. And therefore, you can deduct it from the ksuba rather than have to pay it as mezonos. So that's the advice that Rav Yochanan gave to these relatives. Very good. A loophole over here. But then afterwards, Rav Yochanan said, I did the wrong thing. Rav Yochanan, asinu atzmenu ki orchei adyanim. I did the worst thing in the world. I made myself like a lawyer. Because, as Rashi points out, in Dibra Maskel ki orchei adyanim, ohev echod mi balei dinin. The problem here is make yourself into an orech din, to make yourself into a lawyer, is that you're causing one of the balei dinim to be better off than the other one. Umatim zuchuyos of the dayin. You're making it that his zuchuyos are better in the eyes of the dayin. The orech hadin lifnei dayanim, you're setting up the din in front of the dayanim lischuso for his benefit and to the detriment of the other person. So such a person is mikre orchei hadayanim. It's like you're setting up the deal in front of the dayanim. Shorech has dayanim lahafoch libam letovas shusuzeh. You're causing the dayanim to go and switch around and support this side instead of the other side, which is not right. Rabbi Yochanan said, and therefore I'm sorry that I did this. He had charata that he helped his relatives. Nudi Mor says, why didn't he know this originally? May Kara my Savar, I himself my Savar. Why originally did he do it? And afterwards he subsequently had Charata. So Gemara says, May Kara Savar, Rabbi Yochanan originally thought that there's a pasuk that says you have to go help your relatives out. The highest priority if it's stuck is to go help your relatives before you help somebody that's not a relative. And therefore he thought he had to help them out. He had to help out these Yisomen that inherited their father's estate, were paying what he thought might have been an exorbitant amount of money to take care of the medicinal needs of the widow. But then he said, that's not right. Ulubisof, he said, Sofer, Odom Choshu Shani, it's improper for me as an important individual that people are going to say, oh, look at the way a Talmud Chacham acts, look at the way a great person acts. He says, it's improper for me to have done what I did. So he had charata that he went and did it. Lamaisa, again, obviously one is allowed to be Orech Din, one is allowed to go and bring forth tainus, but everybody agrees that the tainus have to be valid tainus. They may be able to be loopholes in certain situations, albeit a Talmud Chacham, like Rabbi Yochanan, shouldn't make loopholes because that's going to lead to a Chilul Hashem, but at the same time, if they are legal loopholes for a non-Talmud Chacham, for a non-Gadol Hadar, so they're allowed to go take advantage of these loopholes for their relatives, but they shouldn't just go willy-nilly and try to go and influence cases one way or the other. That's considered inappropriate. Again, this is a complicated sugya. We're not getting to a real halacha l'maisa answer over here, but again, it's a very interesting sugya. Now we go on to the next Mishnah. The Mishnah begins, what happens if the chosin did not write in the ksuba, lo kosav lo benin dichrin? The ksuba es benin dichrin that we talked about previously, which we'll see inside the Gemara here today, that is entitling the children of the first wife, for example, to inherit all of the Nidunya that the father of their mother put into the estate because he is encouraged to go and give a large amount of money to encourage his daughter to be able to get married, but he wouldn't want to do so if, in fact, the other children from a second wife or third wife would inherit. So therefore, this is Ksubas Benin Dichrin, that the male children, the sons of that first wife, will inherit under certain conditions all of the Nadunya, and it won't go to the other male children, which would normally inherit equally any estate from their father. So if you didn't write this into the Ksuba, Lo Kosav Law Benin Dichrin Dehevri Lichim Inoy Inon Yirsun Kisach Kisubasech, if you didn't write in this tonight that the rabbis instituted about the Ksuba Benin Dichrin, that the sons of this woman, of we'll call her wife number one, inherit all the Nadunya that her father, the father of wife number one, put in, and so the children of wife number two or wife number three wouldn't have any share in that inheritance under certain conditions if they didn't put in this tnai into the ksuba, what's called the tnai, ksuvas binin dichrin, so they inherit it. Yosra al-chukem the imachon, and they'll get this over all the other chalik that they're entitled to. It doesn't hurt them, it only helps them. Nevertheless, even if they didn't put this in, chayiv, because shu tanai based, because this is a tanai of the ksuba that the rabbis instituted, so whether they wrote it or not, this is in there. That's point number one that the Mishnah makes. Point number two is similarly, benon nukfin the evan lichi minoy. Similarly, if the husband didn't write in that any of the daughters that he will have from this wife, they would be entitled to go and be sustained from the estate, if he dies, Yevan Yosun Mivesi, they can stay in my house, or Mizon Minchosai, and be supported from my estate, from my properties, until they get married, Adetil Chalchun Leguvrin, until they get married to men, or until they reach the age of Bogeres. So, in that situation, if they didn't write in this tonight of the Kasuba, nevertheless, also Chayiv, the husband is obligated to do so, the estate is obligated to do so, because again, Shutnai Basin. This was something that was codified by the Basin, and therefore, whether they wrote it or not, it automatically takes effect. That's point number two from the Mishnah. And point number three, similarly, the Mishnah tells us, if they didn't write into the ksuba that the widow is allowed to stay in the house of her husband after the husband Nebuch passes away and be supported by the estate, not collect the ksuba, but be supported by the estate for as long as she wants to live in that house, as long as she's a widow, she gets married to somebody else, then the other person has the responsibility, she collects the ksuba, and that's it with the first husband. But if she wishes to, she can stay in that house and be supported by the estate for as long as she would like while she's a widow and hasn't married somebody else. So even if they didn't write this into the kesuba chayiv, the estate is obligated to go and support her in this fashion, again, because shutnai basin. This was something the rabbis codified. So this is point number three. Point number one, the ksuba's been in dichrin. Point number two, the benon nukvin, the heavenly chiminoi, yosvin bevesim izon minuchase, that the girls are able to be supported until they get married, until they reach the age of Bogeres of the estate. And point number three, that the widow can stay in the house and be supported by the estate until she either gets married or she decides to take her ksuba. So all three of these points, even if they're not written into the ksuba, they're automatically in effect. Now, on this last point, there is a little bit of a machlokas, because this was the way it was done in Yerushalayim and also in the Galil. Kachiyu anshe Yerushalayim kosvin, and anshe Galil hayu kosvin, ki anshe Yerushalayim. Both in Yerushalayim and in the Galil, they wrote this in, and therefore, if they didn't write it in, that's the way it normally is going to be. It's a Tanaya the Beis Din. However, in Yehuda, anshe Yehuda, they didn't automatically write this in. In fact, they would write, hayu kosvin, atshe yirtsu ayarshim liten lo ksubasech. They would write that if, in fact, the widow wishes to stay there, that's fine, as long as the Yarshim are happy to have that. But if the Yarshim say, no, here's your kesuba, and it's been nice knowing you, so hopefully that doesn't occur, but let's say there's a second wife, and these inheritors are all from a second wife, and they have nothing to do with the first wife, and they want to get rid of her, so they say, here's your ksuba, goodbye. So then, in Yehuda, that was the cost, and they would be allowed to do so. And therefore, even if they didn't write that in Yehuda, even if they didn't write this in Yehuda, since this was the standard way, they didn't have this tie based in that she's allowed to stay there no matter what, so therefore, in Yehuda, in the province of Yehuda, they were allowed to go and give her a ksuba and ask her to leave, even if they didn't write this into the ksuba. Okay, now we go back to the Gemara and discuss the first part of the Mishnah. Amr Yochanan, Mishum Rishum Yochai. Yochanan said, "Name Rishum Yochai." Mipnei ma hiskinu ksubas benin dichrin. Where did they come up with this idea that you'd have the ksubas benin dichrin? So, as I've already mentioned many times, here's where I got it from. Kidei sheyikbots adam v'yichtov lebito kivno. This way, a man will be very encouraged to go and marry off his daughter because he'll know that his properties are going to stay within the family. If he says, listen, if I give my daughter this property, but then there's other wives, and those other wives will have children, and those other children will inherit all my property. I don't want my property to go to somebody else. I want it to stay in my family. So this way, he guarantees that it will stay in his family, and he'll be encouraged to write a large nedunya, a large dowry for his daughter. And this way, it should be easier to get married. Shmuel says, really? But wait a second, in this situation, essentially, the children are inheriting through the mother. And the Torah says, when there are sons, the daughters don't inherit. The old mice of the B'nos Lachol, they said, since there are no sons, we want to inherit. And Moshe Rabbeinu asked HaKosh Baruch. HaKosh Baruch said, yeah, if there are no sons, the daughters inherit. But there are sons, so then how can we give it to the grandchildren of the woman? She's basically inheriting, and when they're boys, the girls don't inherit. And in this situation, the daughter is essentially inheriting. It goes against the laws of Yerusha. So how can they do this? Shmuel says, no, it doesn't go against the laws of Yerusha. This is also the law of Yerusha midaraisa. That's the way our Gemara understands it. Hanami midaraisu, because it's based upon the pasuk. The ksuvas b'din dichwin, when the rabbanu were masakin it, it's based upon this pasuk. It's a din daraisa. The pasuk says, kichu nashim, go take wives, for lidu banim vanus, and you should have children, b'yezus Hashem, or kichu levneichem nashim, and you should go take for your children wives, and for your daughters, v'yesmen osechem to nula noshim. You should go get husbands. Now the Gemara says, we can understand b'shlama banim b'didei kaimi. A man could go out and seek a shidduch for his son. He actively goes and seeks a shidduch for his son. That's the way. Men go out and seek a shidduch. Ela b'naseh for his daughters, mi kaimim b'didei, it's not up to him to marry off his daughters. Somebody has to go and ask, will I marry them? As much as you do ishtadlus, the bottom line is, the daughter can't get married if a man doesn't ask her. So, therefore, you see from this, in order to encourage and enable the daughters to get married, so the father goes and gives a big nedunya to her. He puts her in nice clothing, and he establishes her, and gives her all sorts of adornments, and this way she'll be more desirable to be married. People will jump on her, and will want to go and marry her. How much should you give for this nedunya? So, both of them said, Amr Tavayu. Up to a tenth of your possessions is considered a normal amount. You can give more if you want to, but that's considered a normal amount. And when they don't know what the father would have done, so this is the way they estimate that it would begin of a tenth. And that was the standard amount that they would give, a tenth of their nechasim for the nedunya. Where it says, the emo, the avaleros, the balaleros. So wait a second, maybe then in this situation, the sons only collect this extra benin, ksuvas benin dichwin, they only collect that from the amount that the mother's father put in, but from the extra 100 or 200 that the husband kicks in, or any Tosefes Ksuba that the husband put in, the children aren't entitled to that. So Gemara says, if that's true, Imkain, Avnami, Mimna, Velo Kosav. If the father says, hey, listen, it's only my stuff that's going to go to my children, but the other stuff on your side, that's not going to go to my daughter's children, so then I'm not kicking in anything. So that would almost defeat the purpose. And furthermore, the Ema, would we say, maybe you're going to suggest that only in a situation where the father wrote a nice nedunya for the daughter, then in that situation there's a ksuvas benin dichwin. But if the father didn't have the means and he didn't write such a large dowry or any dowry at all, then there is no din of ksuvas benin dichwin, and the children of that wife wouldn't be entitled to the tosefes ksuba that the husband voluntarily put in on his own, or the base 100, 200. So Gemara says, no. Lo plug rabbanon. In that situation, we say lo plug. This ksuvas benin dichwin applies across the board, no matter what. So in both of these two situations, we conclude that we want to maintain this din of ksuvas benin dichwin. It applies no matter what, whether the father, in fact, gives a large dowry or not. And as well, it applies to the tosefes ksuba and the base ksuba that the husband is required to give. So this will go to the ksuvas benin dichwin as well. The Gemara continues to ask and says, what about Bas Ben Habonim, Nami Teros? Do we say that the Ksuvas Min Dichlin doesn't apply only to the sons of the mother? Maybe it should apply to the daughters of the mother as well. And they should be entitled, because the father maybe won't give if he knows that it's only going to go to his sons. What happens if he doesn't have sons through his daughter? He only has daughters through his daughter. So maybe he won't give. The Gemara says, no. That we don't go so far as to say, because Kenachalo Shavu Rabbanan. This has to be a form of inheritance, and certainly the din is that when there are sons, the daughters don't inherit. So therefore, it has to go through the normal channels of inheritance, and therefore, if there are other sons, then it doesn't go through the normal channels of inheritance if you'd give it to the daughters. So the Gemara says, okay, then Bas Ben Habanos Teros. So then let there be Ksuvas Benin Dichwin for daughters if there only are other daughters. Let's say the husband has two wives. The wife number one that we're talking about, the father put in a nice nedunya. And wife number two, where there is no Nadunya, and now they have two daughters from wife number one and two daughters from wife number two. So this way, all the four daughters would inherit their father equally because there are no sons. So in this situation, there should be Ksuvas Menin Dichwin for those daughters. But we don't say that. So Gemara says, because Lo Plug Rabbanan. Again, a Lo Plug. Across the board, we say there is no din of Ksuvas Menin Dichwin for daughters. It's only a din for sons because under certain situations, it would uproot the dinim of Daraisa Nachla that the sons inherit and the daughters don't inherit. So therefore, even in situations where it doesn't uproot it, we say lo pluk. Now the Gemara says, but then we should also allow v'sigbei mi mitaltele. We should allow this ksubas min dechwin not only to be from karka, it should be also from mitaltele. But we learned previously that it only applies to karka and not mitaltele. So Gemara says, kiksuva shavu rabban, because they made it have the same rules as a ksuba. And the dinim of the ksuba are that you only inherit from karka, and therefore, so too, in this situation, they only collect the ksuvas min dichwin from karka. Again, the base din is that the woman is only entitled to collect ksuba from karka, from the yisomim, and not from metaltlin. Albeit, there's a very, very, very important tosis over here, dibra maslo, v'sigbe, and that tells us that nowadays the din is different. V'hashna, shetiknu ha-gaonim, in the times of the gaonim, after the gemara was concluded, and the gaonim period of time occurred, so the gaonim paskin, sheksuva Gova mimetaltli, in order to protect the wife, so she shouldn't go and be destitute. So if there was no karka, they allow her to collect her ksuba, even from the metaltli that the yorshim inherited, and therefore ksuba sbnin dichrin nami gabya mimetaltli. So nowadays the din is, and this is the halacha l'maisa, that the ksuba being collected even from metaltele and not only from karka, and this would be true for the wife collecting the ksuba or the children collecting kisuvas benin dechrin. Mara still continues to ask the titro of mimishubadi, so then we should also allow them to go and collect this from mishubadim. So if the father had sold off some of the property during his lifetime and their estate has not enough to pay the ksuvas min dechwin, they should be theoretically allowed to go to the lekuchos that the father had sold the property to and demand it from them. So Gemara says, no. Yirsun tanan. This is only a din of Yerusha, but not a din of anybody that bought something from the father would be allowed for the ksuvas min dechwin to go be inherited from that person. Gemara says, ve'ema, abo gav deleka moser dina. So then maybe this din of ksuvas min dechwin should apply even if there is no moser dina. We mentioned the other day, we mentioned it again now, that this din of ksuvas min dechwin only applies if after the ksuba for wife one is given to all of her children, and after the ksuba for wife two is given to all the children, if there is nothing left over it, not even a moser dina, then we don't apply the din of ksuvas min dechwin. But as long as there's at least one dinar extra that could go through the normal Yerusha, that the children will divide that at least one dinar up, so then you do have din of ksuvas min dechwin. So maybe we should delete this din. Maybe there shouldn't be a din of Moser Dinar. So Gemara says, no. This din that the rabbi set up, albeit it was based on a Daraisa, we said earlier in the Shir, but the rabbi set this up, so this is only going to apply as long as some of the Yerusha is done. So as long as there's a Moser Dinar and the Yerusha that will be handled through the normal Yerusha patterns, so then you can have these separate ideas out there of ksuvas binin dechwin that will be inherited differently by the different children of the different wives. Okay. Now the Gemara says, Rav Papa iasak lei livrei be'aba surah. Rav Papa went to go make a shidduch with his son, with the daughter of Abba Surah. And he went there to go and write a ksuba to see how much they would contribute for the nedunya for this daughter of Abba Surah to marry Rav Papa's son. Meanwhile, while he's going there, Ozel Mikhtav Lok Subasa, Shama Yehuda Bar Mereimar, and Nafak Lasu Yischazilei. Yehuda Bar Mereimar, big Tamachok Mikhtzadik, heard that Rapapa was there. He wanted to go visit Rapapa, and he went to Rapapa while Rapapa was on the way to Abba Surah's house. And Kimatu Lepiska, when they reached Abba Surah's house, so Yehuda Bar Mereimar wanted to say goodbye. Havakol Miftar Minei, as Rashi says, he was asking Rishus. When you're with your Rebbe, you have to ask Rishus to leave. So you do not tell Rishus Mirab Papa, Lazar Liacharev, to go back to where he came from. So Rab Papa said to him, why don't you come in with me? I'm like, Neil, Mar Badoy, come in to me and we can continue our conversation and you'll sit by while I discuss the Ksuba with Abba Surah. Now we turn to Nukim Omar Aleph. Rab Papa saw, however, Chazya, as Rashi says, Rab Papa saw the Lo Nichale Yehuda Lemea, that Yehuda was uncomfortable going inside. this great Talmid Chacham, Yehuda Bar Reimer, was not happy about going inside. So Rav Papa thought he knew why. Amalei, Rav Papa said to Yehuda Bar Reimer, he said, "My daita, what are you concerned about?" Mishum Damalei Shmuel, the Rav Yehuda, because Shmuel said to Rav Yehuda, you always called him Shimon, you sharp one. Some suggested it had because he had sharp teeth, but the more commonly accepted understanding is he called him you sharp one because he was very, very sharp. He was very charif. He was very bright. So Shmuel said to Rav Yehuda, in general, lo teve ba'abure achsanta. You should be very careful not to be around when a inheritance is not being done properly. That they're bypassing the laws of Yerusha and doing something, even though it may be legal, but you shouldn't be involved in doing something like this. So the Gemara in Bava Basra tells us that sometimes a man was unhappy with one of his sons. He thought that he wasn't good. And if there were no grandchildren from that son, he would cut him out of the will. He would give over the Yerusha in his lifetime to the other children. So this isn't the right thing to do, because who knows? That right now he's bad, but maybe his descendants will be good, or maybe the other son who you think is good is going to have bad descendants. So don't mess with what the Torah said, even though you have a halachic right to do so. In general, we don't mess with what the Torah said with Yerusha. So that's what Shmuel told Rav Yehuda. Don't be around when somebody's bypassing Bavuri Achsanta, bypassing the normal way that an inheritance is done. So Rav Papa said to Yehuda Bar Reimer, is that what you're concerned about over here? That they're going to do ksuvas b'din dichrin, and that's why you don't want to go in to be around when they're bypassing the normal Yerusha? He says, afil mibra bisha levra tava. You're concerned about when you don't give the Yerusha from a good son, take it to a good son and take it away from a bad son, because the lo yadia my zara nafik b'nei, because you don't know what's going to be in the future. So right now the good son, he may have bad children, and the bad son may have good children. So don't mess with it. And certainly not to go and change around from a son to a daughter. So that's what Shmuel was telling Rav Yehuda, don't be around for something like this. So Rav Papa said to Yehuda Rami, do you think the Ksuvas Bnei Dichrin is the same category? Hainami Takan to the Rabbanani. This is also something that the rabbi said is a good idea, because the Amar of Yochim, Yishum, Rishum, Yochai, as we brought down a few minutes ago, the Rav Yochim said, name of Yishum, Yochai, that you should do the Ksuvas Bnei Dichrin. So why didn't Yehuda Rami want to go inside? So Amalei said to Rav Papa, Hani Mili Midaitei. However, if I go inside there, it's not going to be him willingly doing this ksubas min dichrin lasuye nami. He's going to go and do it because of me. He's going to feel embarrassed that he doesn't give a nice ksuba to the daughter, and it's because of me. So I'm therefore causing him to do this, and that is not proper. Amalei, Rav Papa says back to Yehuda Bar Reimer. He says, "Otu mi komin aloch de ol vasye. Did I tell you to go inside and say anything to him? Oh, come inside, the lo tasye kamina, and don't say anything. I wasn't asking you to go and involve yourself in this one way or the other." Nevertheless, Yehuda Bar Reimer said, "Amalei, ma aloi didi. My just going in there, hainu asye. That's as if I'm going to go and force him to do this." As Rashi says, "Kinitzo si, my entering there imach with you zeo asui." That's as if we're forcing him to do this, shiyar belivsuk mishvil kvodi, because in my honor, he's going to feel that he has to go raise the ksuba. No, Rav Papa pushed and pushed, and achbayiv all, and he convinced Yehuda Bar Reimer to come inside. Ishtik v'yosef, and he didn't say a word. Yehuda Bar Reimer sat through the whole discussion, the negotiation with Abba Surah in regards to the ksuba, and he was silent. So therefore, Savar Hahu was the gear, so we have a Rashi says, Savar Iyu. In other words, Abba Surah thought that his silence meant he was unhappy with the amount of the Nedunya, and Mir Tach Rasach, and he thought he was angry at Abba Surah for not writing a bigger Nedunya. So Kasve L'chol Mai Dehavale. So Abba Surah wrote every single penny that he had over to be the Nedunya. And Lesof, he saw that still he wasn't saying anything. So I'm like, Hash Donami Lo Mishtoi Mar. Abba Surah said to Yehuda Bar Reimer, you're still not happy. You're not saying anything. I wrote over everything I have. Chayai, I make a shua, so to say, by my life. Demarlo shviki midi l'nashay. I didn't leave anything over. How could you be unhappy with the amount of the dunya that I'm giving? So Yehuda Bar Reimer said to Abba Surah, he said, Im inoi didi, if you had asked my advice, as Rashi says, Im notalto mimeni yetz, if you'd asked me what to do, I would have said, Afilu hainami dekosavta lo nicha li. I would have said that which you wrote over here, even the original amount that you wrote before you wrote over everything, that's not what I would have done. Because I don't believe that you should bypass the normal laws of Yerusha. So Amalei, so Abba Surah said to this Yehuda Bar Reimer, no, okay, if that's what you're telling me now, hashtunami, ahadabi. So I'll retract what I offered, but nothing is signed. There's a top toaster says over here, apagav the heinein dvarim haniklim v'amira. Normally something like this is considered codified by just saying it. Nevertheless, that's only if you actually do the Kiddushin right there, and then it is considered codified. But if you don't do the Kiddushin right there, or alternatively, if you did the Kiddushin beforehand, so then Hainan Varm don't automatically make a Kinyan, and I have the right to go and retract. So Al-Hashtanami, Ahadabi. So Abba Surah said to Yehuda Bar Reimer, no, should I go back and retract? So Amalei, so Yehuda ben Rehum said to Abasura, I didn't tell you to go be a retractor over here. Shavya Nafshach Hadrona Lo Kamina. I did not want to make you to somebody that doesn't go and do what they said. Midvar Sheker Tirchok. If you say something, you should go and fulfill it. The person makes an oral statement, so even though he may not be obligated halachically to go and fulfill it, he should go and fulfill what he said. Never say something that isn't, in fact, going to be carried out. If you say something, so then, you know, if you said something, your word should mean something to you, and therefore you should do what you just said. Okay, it was a long shiur today. Baruch Hashem, we concluded. I hope it was able to be understood. With this, we conclude today's shiur.